Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Devere. Today's guest, French Ambassador Gérard Arrault. Arrault has been the ambassador here in Washington since 2014. Before that, he spent 5 years at the UN. In today's Washington, where foreign leaders talk with the president directly, ambassadors aren't like they are in the movies, coming in to represent their government in the Oval Office, making the case. Arrault certainly isn't. He's never met Trump, and though he told me he spends a lot of time talking to people in the West Wing, like National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, most of his job is like what most of the other ambassadors in Washington do: represent their country's interests in all sorts of ways around the country, fostering ties, and serving as the eyes and ears for their governments back home to try to understand what's going on in Washington and in American politics. Most other countries don't do ambassadors the way we do here, where presidents pick their friends and allies and big donors for the jobs. France doesn't. Arrault started out at the UN as an ambassador under Nicolas Sarkozy, arrived in D.C. under François Hollande, and is now serving under the new president, Emmanuel Macron. That doesn't mean he's without his own views. They come out a lot, often on Twitter, and not always so diplomatically, like what he tweeted on election night. It's the end of the era of neoliberalism. We don't know what comes next. When I asked him what comes next, he started off by saying he regretted tweeting that night, but that also he turned out to be right. The world is changing, adapting to the reaction coming up through democracies to how governments were approaching trade and international agreements and all sorts of policies that depend on open borders. It's pretty clear that Arrault wishes it weren't changing that much. President Trump is off to the G20 for his third big international meeting of the year. He was at the G7 and NATO both in May. Then he'll turn around and head back to Europe, to France, where he'll go to the Bastille Day parade on invitation from Macron, continuing to sketch out the strange relationship between the two of them that's been defined so far by the alpha male handshake they had a couple weeks ago, and Macron taking a make the world great again shot on Twitter at Trump when he pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. You can read the article I wrote about the conversation on our website and how it fits into the dynamics that are going on in Washington and foreign policy. As you'll hear Arrault point out, the changes in global dynamics aren't just about Trump. There's a larger shift in America going on that he traces under Obama too, America essentially pulling back from leadership role in the world in a lot of ways, responding to where the electorate is. And Arrault talked about what that's going to mean for how France and Europe responds to what's coming next. First, though, we'll talk with Annie Carney again, one of our White House reporters here at Politico, who was with Trump at the G20, and talk through what Europeans make of Trump, and whether the White House cares at all what they have to say, or about the angst that they're feeling, or anything else. Remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Great episodes coming up, including Utah Senator Mike Lee on his new book about the Founding Fathers, what they'd make of Trump, and what they'd make of the process going on around the health care bill. Follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at Isaac Devere. And email me with your thoughts at isaac@politico.com. And now, before we get to Ambassador Arrault, my conversation with Annie Carney. You've been to Europe twice since Trump was inaugurated, once when Ivanka Trump went to Germany on her goodwill tour there, and you were part of the trip when the president went in May. What is the view that you have seen from the Europeans of him and of what his realignment of American politics is meaning for them?
Very, very negative. In France.
And that's not just the polling data.
Well, no. I mean, well, first of all, the polling data, like, for instance, in France, he is less popular than he is here. I think his unfavorables are like 82%, I think I just saw. But this is also based on watching the reception Ivanka got in Berlin, where she was booed, and it was the line when she tried to defend her father as being supportive of women that she got hissed and booed at. And they just really don't understand what it even means that, like, family members are the most senior people in this administration. They don't understand how a government works like that. I was on the whole foreign trip, and I mean, the contrast between how he was greeted in Saudi Arabia and Israel, where he's very popular, to how he was greeted by the European leaders was black and white. So this is a part of the world where they see that Merkel is now the leader of the free world. And people in the Trump administration, like Bannon, have said that, like, they're opposed to the EU. So,
and what is the White House response to those feelings? I mean, do they care about it? Do you find that they're talking about it at all, or that they're okay with it and it's part of what goes on? Are they frustrated to see the Europeans say, okay, well, Merkel's the leader of the free world now?
Well, I think that Bannon sort of likes it. Like, he hates Merkel. He hates the European Union. So to have that as a nemesis is great for him. And they just have so much else going on domestically that it's just, I don't sense that it's high on the list of the biggest problems they have to deal with.
He is about to go again to Europe. He'll be in Warsaw and then in Hamburg for the G20. Do we have a sense of what he wants out of that trip?
I mean, the big part of this trip that is he's going to meet with Putin on the sidelines of the G20. And I was just reading a story by our colleague Michael Crowley, quoting H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, saying he doesn't really have any agenda. He's just going to talk about whatever the president wants to talk about. And, like, Putin's going to show up with a very clear agenda of what he wants from the American president. And, like, what Trump is going to talk about, Joe and Mika and the facelift. Like, that's clearly what he wants to talk about. So, no, he doesn't have a clear agenda there.
He'll also have a bilateral meeting with Emmanuel Macron and has accepted already to go back to Europe for Bastille Day for the parade there. They have this sort of weird relationship. Macron, remember, had the alpha handshake. Male handshake. Yeah. And then when Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, Macron tweeted something about make the world great again.
Right.
He's obviously playing against Trump.
Yes.
What is that, the view on that dynamic from the White House? Do they care about it?
You know, the funny thing is, I think Macron is like a young, handsome, central casting sort of looking politician, which is what Trump actually respects and likes. So it might help him actually like the guy a little bit.
Also from created his own political movement. Right.
Yeah. Trump, you know, basically endorsed Le Pen, but then was gracious and he did like congratulate Macron for winning the election. We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see is the constant in thinking about what Trump means for things. The ambassador spoke about the way that he has had his interplay with the White House and tried to make the case that not a lot of it has been deeply affected by Trump becoming president, that in terms of the National Security Council, which is where he has the most contact, that's the same. Does that sound credible to you when you hear that that's the way that people are talking about it?
I'm surprised to hear that just because, like, the blow-ups with the State Department have been some of the most intense. The clashes with Tillerson and with the White House and with, it's not clear, do foreign leaders talk to Jared? Like, who's the point of contact? For instance, the reason Ivanka went to Germany was at the invitation of Merkel. At the time she went, there wasn't even a U.S. ambassador to Germany appointed. So it was a play of Merkel's, like she's looking at the landscape of Trump advisors. She sees that like the daughter is apparently really important. She's thinking like maybe that can be my back channel to Trump. I need someone there that I can deal with. Ivanka was seemingly her best bet. I think it also shows like it's not clear for a lot of world leaders who to go to over there.
So in all, the president went to the G7 meeting, he went to the NATO meeting, he was going to the G20 meeting. The Bastille Day invitation is something that is not part of the official calendar. And no matter what, a president's going to go to the G7 and G20. But overall, it seems like the point of the Trump presidency so far when it comes to foreign policy is it's not really their main concern.
I mean, I think the New York Times reported this, but he prefers when the foreign leaders come here. He likes it on his turf. He doesn't like to travel. It's not their main concern. It's America first regime here. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to England, which is typically an early visit. That was canceled. He
hasn't been to Canada, which is usually the, like traditionally the first.
But he clashed with the mayor of London. Yeah. So, yeah, it's these people are secondary to him. The ones he's really bonded with are not the European leaders. He bonded with Abe. Mm-hmm. Over golf.
A little bit with the President Xi in China, and they had that dinner.
Yeah.
Famously, they were having dinner as the Syria strike was
He's close
ordered.
With Netanyahu,
yep.
Who just really kissed up to him the whole time he was in Israel. He, like, loved the king of Saudi Arabia.
The ambassador says, to just bring it back to this point, he said not just with Trump, but overall, that America sort of pulls back now, and we see France and Germany having to take the leading role. And from the White House perspective, that also jives with America first?
Yeah. From the White House perspective, I don't hear a lot of concern about Europe. I just don't.
The Europeans are concerned about Trump and the White House isn't concerned about...
Am I wrong?
No, I think that's a fair way of putting it. And it is one of the X factors now that gets thrown into everything that mm-hmm. happens. We'll see what happens when there is something that really requires an international response, mm-hmm. if something like that
right. comes I mean, up. That's the constant of the coverage of Trump. It's like, for all the insanity, everything that's happening is self-created. There hasn't been an actual crisis that he's had to deal with on an international level.
All right, well, we'll leave it on that note. Annie Carney, White House reporter for Politico. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And now, Ambassador Arro. You've been in Washington now almost 3 years as the ambassador. Before that, you were about 5 years in New York at the UN. It's not your only experience in America. You spent a lot of time here. How has your view of American politics and what America is evolved and changed over that time, and has it been affected by what's going on and what happened in the election and what's been going on since?
You know, usually when I was asked by the French or by the Americans to make a comparison between French and American politics, usually I was always starting by saying they are very different. And what is striking is that actually French, or maybe beyond France, European and American politics are extremely comparable today, in a sense that Western democracies, all the Western democracies, we are facing the same rebellion of some of our voters. In a sense, in France, like in the US, like in the UK with Brexit, you have a substantial part of the citizens who are saying that they are fed up with the elites, that they consider that the elites are not delivering for them, that they have tried the traditional parties, so they want to try something else. And basically somebody who is going to toss the table.
And that's a general statement about what's going on in the world, and there's a lot of reason to believe that there's some validity to that. But has your sense of what American politics has changed? Has it surprised you? I was reading an interview with you from 2015, and you said, I think the strength of this country, and it's talking about America, is its extraordinary unity. I think a lot of Americans feel like we're actually torn apart at this point in many ways. Do you think that that's still true, that the unity is there?
You know, it's, in a sense, in Europe, we have been facing this populist wave, this populist anger for, I think, in the case of France, more than a decade. And in the U.S., it was quite a surprise. If you look at the macroeconomics, the U.S. is a country in full employment. You are now in the longest growth since the Second World War. So everybody, more or less, was surprised by the success of the Republican candidate Donald Trump. So I was surprised also.
Everybody was. I think Donald Trump was surprised.
No, I think you are not fair. I think the candidate Donald Trump has actually understood that something was happening in the country. He felt it, and he was elected on that.
Oh no, I think you're right about that. He, more than many politicians that have been around in America, understood what was going on in the guts of Americans and how to speak to it. That he was able to win in the end, that's what I mean, was a surprise to him. The reporting that I've done suggests that, and he seems to continue to...
You know, on November the 8th, you know, at 6 p.m., we were calling the Hillary Clinton team, and they were telling us that she was elected. So I think it was quite a surprise for everybody.
Was there another conversation after that?
No, because after that, we saw little by little, you know, what was happening on the ground.
What was the relationship with the Trump campaign like over that time? If on election day, you were already in contact enough with the Clinton campaign?
So, the difficulty was that he was really an outsider. So really, as you know, a lot of people in this city, especially a lot of Republicans in this city, had signed a letter against the candidate Trump, you know, the so-called Never Trumpers. So it was, in a sense, a bit more complicated than usual to get in touch with people who were really close to the campaign. But I think we did it. And now with the administration, we have no more relationship with the Trump administration.
I want to just dwell on election night for a little bit. You tweet a lot, as I think anybody who knows anything about you knows. And you tweeted some things on election night that said that it's the end of the era of neoliberalism. We don't know what comes next. Do you feel like you have more of an answer yet in the 7 months since election day? What happened been what you thought it would be, the end of neoliberalism in that way? And have you seen anything about where we're going?
Actually, I think this tweet was a mistake because it has created a uproar. But I think I was right, actually. I was wrong to send it, but I think I was right in my analysis.
It's the problem with Twitter. Sometimes you get onto it too quickly and exactly. Say what you really mean.
No, actually, my trauma was, Brexit first, June the 23rd. And I think I don't know any British friend who told me that Brexit would pass, and it passed. After that, there was the election in this country. And frankly, I never met anybody in Washington, D.C. who told me that Donald Trump could be elected, and he was elected. So my conclusion in this long night was that actually something critical, something essential was happening in our societies. And that's something that actually I, like most of the people I knew, didn't foresee. And that was the reason of my reaction. And the second point was, obviously, observing the campaign of Brexit, observing the campaign of the American campaign, you saw this rebellion of the people against globalization. Now people say it's not only globalization, it's also automation. But it's obviously a lot of our citizens are telling us, have told us that they have suffered from globalization. And that's we were after 20 or 30 years of neoliberalism, which means opening of the borders, free trade. And basically our citizens say enough is enough with that. So that's the reason why my conclusion was that because we are democracies, we are obliged to respond to the concerns of our citizens, that the era of neoliberalism was coming to an end.
And it's still coming to an end in what you've seen since.
I think that we have to look, and I think the question is now, how to respond to the concerns of these voters. Because speaking of France, if President Macron is not successful in this way, well, the next election, the far right or the far left will win. So it's critical to listen to these people. So the notion, for instance, of fair trade, which is supported by the Trump administration, I think there is something behind it, really. Because you can argue, saying, okay, some parts of the country will suffer, but globally the economy will benefit from an agreement. But unfortunately, behind this globally, you have the success of some, but you have also the sufferings of others. And I think we have reached a point where it's not possible anymore. So what does it mean, fair trade? In terms of environmental or social rules, for instance. So I don't say that free trade is over, but it's certainly that I think that we will have to correct it to take into account our citizens, what our citizens have told us.
You're here, you've been the ambassador in these months since President Trump won. How has diplomacy changed in Washington in the Trump administration, under the Trump administration? What is different about things these days?
Well, first, there is the usual period of the transition. People forget that in this country, a transition it's a bit long and grueling and a bit chaotic process, because any president who has been elected has to appoint hundreds of civil servants. And also in a system which is an advantage of the American system, because you can elect somebody who has not been around in politics for 30 years, who doesn't have an experience. So it takes some time to stabilize.
Yeah, I think Americans are always struck when there's a French election, how quickly you go from the polls closing and the winner being announced, and then that person's president 3 days later.
Exactly. So that's uh, That's a, yes, that's an advantage. But nevertheless, we have also our the problems of a transition. So really, we are in the middle of this transition. So we have to get acquainted to new people. We have to wait for the appointment of new people. But for instance, looking at the National Security Council, which is really the close team of the president, we have a very good relationship with the National Security Council under General McMaster. The new National Security Advisor of President Macron was here in town 2 days ago. You know, really, and he had been appointed only 10 days ago, and he spent 3 hours with General McMaster. Because the reality is that we are together, the American and the French, on battlefields. Unfortunately, again, we are shoulder to shoulder fighting the terrorists, either in Africa or in Syria, in the Levant. In a sense, we are obliged, unfortunately, by the facts, we are obliged to cooperate, and we are cooperating.
There is the sense that that the administration is keeping a distance from foreign allies. Have you found that in any way?
No, I don't think so, because, as you know, really, the president, Trump, was on the phone with his colleague as soon as he was elected. He made a big trip, you know, and this trip led him to Europe. And when he was in Europe, you know, he had a lunch with President Macron, and he met the people, he met the NATO leaders, the leaders of the G7. And he will be, on the first day of July, he will be back in Europe for the G20. So, no, I think, you know, frankly, whatever people are saying, it's impossible for the U.S. simply to leave the world, you know, really. And I think this administration, of course, is trying to define a new policy, but this administration knows that the U.S. is an essential part of the world order.
But you haven't seen any change? It's interesting. What you just sketched out is as if things are proceeding as they were under the Obama administration. Is that really how it is? There's nothing that's different?
Well, again, I think in the way the things are processed, it's different because, as I have said, we are in the middle of a transition. And after a while, we were with a Democratic administration, which has been around for 8 years. So it's quite different. You have also the personality of the
right.
president. The personalities are quite different. So I really, it's obvious that really there are different aspects. But at the same time, these administrations, I'm talking in terms of foreign policy, they are really basically facing the same challenges.
Sure.
And they are facing the same challenges on the basis also of the same feelings of the American public opinion. I give you the example of Syria. There is no appetite for the American public opinion to get the United States deeply involved in the Syrian civil war, and frankly, when you look at the policy followed by the Obama administration and the Trump administration, there are differences, but they are not really strategic differences. Basically, the plan which is followed by the U.S. forces against the terrorists is more or less the plan which had been elaborated under the Obama administration.
So you haven't seen any impact from America First or that shift? And
actually, the America First paradigm and maybe you know will be felt on the trade issues. You know, really, but so far for the Europeans, we have not yet felt a difference, but we are following it, you know, really the question basically whether there will be a more protectionist America compared to the previous administration. You know, there will be the renegotiation of NAFTA with Canada and Mexico. And there are some rumors that on steel, the administration may take some measures. So it really we are waiting for that and to see whether there will be consequences for Europe.
Have you met President Trump?
No.
Is that unusual to...
No, the ambassadors don't meet the ambassadors. You know, the only time that the ambassadors are meeting the president is usually when they present their credentials.
Right.
Which is quite a ceremonial opportunity.
And sometimes when there's a... It seems like when things go wrong, right? There was a moment. You went to see the President Obama after the attacks, right?
That was very particular. When the president came to the after a terrorist attack, when the first one actually, and he came to this embassy, which was, of course, a very really, we were moved by this, by his coming, and I had the opportunity to discuss the issue of Islamic terrorism with him at the moment.
You talked about the difference in personality, which is obvious there, between Barack Obama and Donald Trump. What do you make of Donald Trump? How do you explain him to your colleagues in the French government, those who are in France and not seeing day to day the way that he is as president? What's your assessment of him that you give them?
Oh, you know, really, I am an ambassador, you know, really. So it's a bit,
see how diplomatic you're going to be.
I try to, you know, again, the personality of Barack Obama was also very particular.
Yep.
So it's really, it was, and you have this, you know, this new president. So first, he's new. So really, so there is a problem of experience. I think that the President Trump, you know, will have also to define himself as President of the United States. It's something which is quite incredible, you know, really. And the same thing for Emmanuel Macron. You were, and maybe more for Donald Trump, who has never been in politics, you know, going from being a businessman in New York City to become the president of the first world power. So it's really, you need, I think, a learning curve. And I think the president is in his learning curve. So that's what I try to convey to Paris before the meeting between our two presidents. I told also my president that really Donald Trump was quite direct, and mm-hmm. so that the president really should express, the French president should express himself the same way. I think it went well. Actually, they were on the phone now two or three times, and there was this lunch, and I think things went well.
Do you you talked about how well the relationship is going and understanding the connections that maybe you didn't understand before between French and American politics. What is the government's view, and not just the government's view, on Donald Trump and on what is happening in America? You talked about your own view on it, and I'm wondering if you can help us see the way this looks from France. In America, we hear a lot about how people in Europe are not sure of where America is and anxious about what's going on. Is that an accurate reflection of it, or do you think that Europeans maybe should calm down about the anxieties that we are hearing expressed?
Well, I think that every 8 years there is this strange period where the rest of the world is trying to figure out who is the American president. In a sense, someday I was joking, saying that an American president is so important that actually he should be elected by the world, and that we should have a say in the name of the American president. So again, I feel like
Europeans often feel that way about presidential elections.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, really, we feel this way. So again, we have a new president, and in a sense, it's also a bit unusual because again, he has never been around in politics. He has is a businessman with a very strong personality, and he's expressing him in a very direct way. So really, so again, we have to. What I try to tell Paris and what I try to explain to my to the French is that beyond the words, what matters will be the politics. So what will be the American policy towards Syria, towards Russia, towards North Korea, that's what matters. And when you are looking at it, as I have said, it's not that different. You know, there is nothing really critical as really happened. But on one issue, which is very emotional in Europe, which is the climate change.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious that that's a very tough challenge for us because, as you know, the Europeans are very much committed to fighting climate change. And it happens that this agreement had been negotiated in Paris. So obviously, we were dismayed by the American decision to denounce the Paris Agreement. But what we want to do, in a sense, beyond, because we know there are domestic politics in every country and in this country, on climate change. Climate change is a sort of ideological battle or religious battle. So it's basically what matters beyond these politics is the American society, which actually is very committed to fighting climate change. You know, the states, but also the cities, the major corporations, you know, really are engaged. And I think, you know, Michael Bloomberg, you know, really said publicly recently that whatever Washington is deciding, actually the Americans are going to abide by the commitments made towards Paris.
Do you think it sends a bigger signal, though? That was one of the criticisms that we heard of President Trump when he made the announcement about the Paris Accord, is that it showed America stepping away from the leadership of the world in a significant way, and that message would be received by the world, by countries in Europe, by China, by everybody, as a real difference in how America's role fits into what's going on? Or is that overreaction?
The question is on the table. And actually, you were referring to America First. What is the meaning of America First? You really, again, you remember of the speech, the Inauguration Day by the president, and there was this, paper, document written by McMaster, General McMaster and Gary Cohn. So the question is there. What will be the policy of the United States versus the world order at a time when this world order, the traditional liberal order, is more or less undermined, really, or looks endangered? So where are the United States? And that's a question which is on the table. And again, as I've said, we need to expect the development of a real foreign policy of the new administration. We are still in a transition. And it's true that denouncing the climate change agreement, the Paris Agreement, was sending a bad signal in this sense.
Does the world move on without America then?
I think it's impossible to move on without the America. And I think also that the United States really can't let the world move on. You know, the interests of the U.S. are so diverse and worldwide diverse that the U.S. can't afford simply leaving the world.
When the president announced the decision about the Paris Accord, one of the things that he said was that when the negotiations were happening, he said it several times, so I'm paraphrasing the way that he said it, that people were laughing at America for agreeing to these conditions. Were people laughing at America?
Of course, no, and especially because most of the conditions which were referred in the speech of the president were actually conditions set by the Americans themselves. You know, the Paris Agreement is a framework agreement where all the countries, and that was the important message, you have for the first time in our history 192 countries, but also behind the countries, hundreds of cities, of corporations, saying we are serious about fighting climate change. And after that, each country, because of course we had to respect the sovereignty of the U.S., sure, like respect the sovereignty of China, each country was making its national commitment, saying, okay, I will reduce by 25%. I will do that, and that. And the Obama administration has presented an American commitment. So in a sense, if the U.S. were not satisfied by their own commitment, they could actually change it.
Right.
But there was no need, no practical need to get out of the agreement. As I've said, it's a framework agreement. It's not binding. It was more, and that was the importance of that, it was more a political commitment of everybody saying, okay, something is happening with the climate change and we want to fight it together. But of course, each country was going to do it on the basis of its own constraints, its own economy, its own political life. So what I've tried to tell the administration and the on the Hill also was, change your national commitments if you believe that President Obama was too ambitious, but you don't need to get out of the Paris Agreement.
Do you think that people are laughing at the United States because of that decision, or what is the response to it?
You're never laughing at the United States. No, it's really more, I think, sadness. You know, really, we are in a paradoxical situation now when China is lecturing, the U.S. about the world order and saying we will be exemplary in fighting climate change ourselves. It's obvious that for the Europeans can't think of building a future without the Americans. You know, we are belonging to the same civilization.
And the responses on the Paris decision were where this came up the most, both in some of the comments from other world leaders, and there were political cartoons that we saw where it was you talk about being at the table, and there was one, I think it was in an Australian paper, of there was a high chair for President Trump, that he was being portrayed as a baby or a laughingstock for some. Is that just, that's not the general mood that you perceive in the international community?
No, as for the international community in the sense of the leaders, you know, really, of course, we have domestic politics too. And as I've said, the issue of climate change is also very emotional in our public opinion. So we were, the French leaders or the French president, but also the European leaders had also to react to show that they were disappointed by the American decision. But what is very important, I do hope that we succeed on both sides, is to avoid this issue as sort of festering issues in our bilateral relationship. So I really do hope that with the time we find a way of working on climate change together and avoiding this issue coming back and back.
Is that possible, though? I mean, it seems like, given the investment that so many countries had in the Paris Accords, given the frustration about President Trump pulling out of it and that he has made no moves, it seems, to start the negotiations or renegotiations that he said he might be interested in. Is it actually possible to get past that decision?
You know, and when you look, I will surprise you, but when you look at the decision announced by President Trump, you can argue, and some people in the administration, you are arguing reverse, you know, really, that actually this decision was the minimal decision which had to be taken. Considering the promises made during the electoral campaign, considering the atmospherics in the Republican Party, it had really something had to be announced. But the fact is that, you know, there could have been much worse decisions, actually. The fact is that the U.S. are still in the Paris Agreement. Because, as you know, announcing the withdrawal, it takes 3 years in a legal sense, you know, really. And also the fact that, really, the issue, the president say, renegotiation or new negotiation, really is presented by the administration as an opening. And they tell us we don't ask to renegotiate the agreement itself, but to renegotiate the part of the U.S., you know, the part of the U.S., So, and the U.S. are withdrawing from the Green Fund, but not from the other environmental funds. So again, half empty, half full, that's the usual, usual game. Considering the politics on both sides of the Atlantic, people are saying full or empty. I guess that the work of the ambassador is to try to go back to the half full, half empty, and really trying to say, okay, politics, well, but let's look at the substance. What can we do? Let's work together, you know, really.
Emmanuel Macron, when he had his first meeting with the president, there was a somewhat famous handshake that they had, and that he would not let go of President Trump's hand. It seemed like a very alpha male moment. And he said afterwards that was on purpose, that he didn't want to give an inch. In the time since then, it seems President Trump had got his attention because we know from reporting that it was maybe not the thing driving the decision that he made about the Paris Accords, but it was somewhere in his mind. Can you speak a little bit for President Macron? Has his sense of President Trump been changing? Has he been reassessing how to grapple with President Trump?
Again, the question that any Western European leader has to answer to is, again, what are we going to do if the U.S. are withdrawing from the world order? Really, the first one to raise the issue was Chancellor Merkel. And you know, today, President Macron has offered an interview to 8 newspapers in Europe. And basically, the question is, we have to be ready. Of course, our strong preference is to work with the U.S. Really, as I've said, we have so many common interests and so and shared values. If in some occasions the U.S. decide for their own reasons and not to intervene or not to do, we should be ready. And I want to go beyond this question of President Trump to emphasize that the question of America First, in a sense, was raised in a discreet way also under President Obama. You know, look at the Ukraine crisis, which, you know, really, do you know another crisis since 1945, a major crisis, invasion of a country, and where actually the U.S. had a very minimal involvement and let France and Germany negotiate with Russia and between Russia and Ukraine. Look at Syria, you know, nearly 500,000 of dead, all the region destabilized, and now the destabilization spreading over to Europe. And the U.S. administration, the Obama administration, decided really that not to intervene. So in a sense, I do believe that it's more interesting to ask the question about America itself, not the America of Trump or the America of Obama, but what is today the appetite of the Americans to have an active role in the world affairs. And which sort of role? You know, obviously, after the military adventures, especially the Iraqi one, which was an unmitigated disaster, there is a sort of fatigue, you know, really among the Americans towards this military intervention. So it's in a very logical way, after too much intervention, maybe we go to not enough. But there is a debate in this country, and it goes beyond President Trump.
And it seems your perspective is that would probably be true whether President Trump is president for 3.5 more years or 7.5 more years or someone else is president. Because I think you're right that with President Obama, he very purposely left the Ukraine issue for Merkel to take the lead on and receive criticism for that and other things along the way for not having an American leadership role. It does seem like in practice, a lot of what President Trump might do could be similar to, could get to the same conclusions about action, even if the principle behind them is different.
Exactly. No.
And so then who is the leader of the free world if America is not?
Well, I think that first we have to define what is the free world. And today there is no, the expression of leader, I think it doesn't really doesn't fit the question, and you know, is for Emmanuel Macron, is really to try to give a new impetus to the European Union. The European Union has been struck, you know, hit very, very painfully by the economic crisis that you have generously exported to us, and so all the European endeavor is endangered. The Eurozone also was not ready. So as you know, here when you look at the populism, is its targets are Wall Street and Washington D.C. In Europe, it's largely Brussels, and one of the response that we have to bring to the voters is the future of the European Union. Can we reform the European Union? Can we give a new momentum to the European Union so that it appears not as a sort of neoliberal channel, but as protecting the citizens, protecting socially, economically, but also protecting in terms of protecting the borders, which means also in terms of security. And that's what he will try to do after the German elections, because the Germans have their general election in October, so nothing is possible right now. So after the German elections, and also on the French side, after Macron, the President Macron has succeeded to reform the French economy, which is also, of course, very important, because you can't ask something if you have not done your homework.
All right, Ambassador, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
That was Gerard Auro, the French Ambassador. Thanks to our producer, Bridget Mulcahy, and our intern, Rachel Cusick. You can check out the article I wrote about Auro and how he fits into what's happening in Washington and foreign policy up on our website, politico.com. Remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes so you can hear that conversation with Mike Lee and much, much more, like comedian Maz Jobrani on the immigrant experience and comedy in the age of Trump. Great lineup coming up over the next few weeks. But as always, email me at isaac@politico.com about who else you'd like to hear.